Good morning. 00 hours. Mostly cloudy. 26 degrees. Good morning. 01 hundred hours. Mostly cloudy. 25 degrees. Good morning. 02 hundred hours. Mostly cloudy. 25 degrees. Good morning. 03 hundred hours. Mostly cloudy. 26 degrees. Good morning. 04 hundred hours. Mostly cloudy. 26 degrees. Good morning. 05 hundred hours. Mostly cloudy. 25 degrees. Good morning. 06 hundred hours. Mostly cloudy. 25 degrees. Good morning. 07 hundred hours. Mostly cloudy. 26 degrees.
W8FU.
Good morning. 08 hundred hours. Mostly cloudy. 25 degrees. Good morning. 09 hundred hours. Sunny. 26 degrees. Good morning. 10 hundred hours. Sunny. 29 degrees. Good morning. 11 hundred hours. Sunny. 31 degrees.
K8RUH mobile.
Good afternoon. 12 hundred hours. Mostly cloudy. 34 degrees.
M-A-K-B. great. Oh, great. I can take that later. What up?
Oh, just been a crazy Monday. I was hoping to get up that way and take care of that frequency thing, but there ain't no way it's going to happen today. Tomorrow's looking pretty pitiful, too. I don't know. Maybe shoot for Wednesday. Might be my plan, Wednesday morning.
Wednesday would be a more better day for assistance, if you so desire.
Yeah, I think I'll make that the plan. I'll take a look at my calendar and make sure it's clean, but maybe I'll, after things get settled down, I get in, and after things get settled down, I might shoot up there and try to knock it out in the field. It's not a big move, so it shouldn't be hard to do it in the field, although that always brings a little extra challenge to the job.
It is my understanding the radio is probably going to be the easy part. It's those little tin cans underneath it that might be the difficult part. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's maybe there's three slugs that you have to, there may be just a ever so slight amount of improvement to be had by tweaking the front end and the receiver, three coils, but that's literally it. There's nothing else that you have to do in the actual repeater itself. It's all in the cavities. It's a pass notch duplexer, so you gotta adjust the pass and then adjust the notch on both sides. And normally it's a little bit of a process that I normally do on the bench, but I'm gonna try to field tune it. Fingers crossed. What I should probably do is, I've got another one of them sitting here somewhere. Where? I know I got one somewhere. So I thought I did. Anyhow, I should tune one up here on the requisite pair, and then that way I just have to swap it out.
Well, if you got an extra pair, that make more sense, and that way you could do it with, I'm assuming, some sort of signal generator and an analyzer, which you might have access to.
Now you're going to make me go look for a duplexer. See what you did.
Well, look at the bright side of things. If it doesn't go smooth, you got it with you. And if everything's right there, and it might save you two trips.
Well, it ain't going to be today, and I think I know where the duplexer is. I think it's in... Or no, it might be in this vehicle. I've got to go see if it's here. Bring it in. That way I can let it warm up over the next 24 hours, so I'm not tuning it while it's cold, ice cold. I think it's in the back of the work car. I'm going to go check that out.
Yeah, I think that would be a more better idea, and that way you could be in and out of that whole project in a short wrap, and then we could go have lunch or breakfast or whatever works out for the timing.
I like it. All right, I'm going out to the car now. See if I've got one of them bad rascals here.
Very good. I'm going by the dump tower, and I'm going to look and see if the gates are secure. And it looks like they are. All right, talk in a bit. N-A-K-P-P.
All right, here we go, the moment of truth. And survey says... Huh. Oh, look, long box, hold on. Could have used them all up now, could I?
There's got to be a set in that big, beautiful building that you work in, somewhere along the line.
Maybe, but we haven't really ran any of those in decades, so pretty much I'm down to my own personal collection. Huh. I've got some, just not the ones I like.
Well, if it's not the ones you like, tune them for just temporary. And, you know, that way at least you're covered. You won't have to make two urgent trips. So, of course, I don't know if the connectors are all going to be the same. I imagine they would be. And that way at least you got a temporary pair with you to make it work. Because if not, then you got to throw it in frequency and throw it where it belongs and undo it and go the other way. So I don't know how hard these are to tune. I've never done it, so it's going to be a learning experience for me.
Well, the one I got here is a Sinclair. It's a good one, but it's a they're fidgety. They're a plunger style. Why? I knew I had one more of the cell waves that I really like. God darn it. I wonder if I've got two up there in preparation for the other machine I was going to put up there. I wonder if they're both up there.
If you have need be, I can go there. No, I can't. I'm sorry about that. I was going to say I can go there tomorrow morning, but I can't do that. I've already committed my morning tomorrow. I've got a 9:30 for work, and I got a 1:30 for work.
Nah, I'll just go up there, prepare to tune. Whatever. Not that big a deal. But, yeah, I think I should definitely have another cell wave set here somewhere. That's confusing me. I'll figure it out.
Very good. Anything else exciting been happening in the world of ham radio? Oh, I know I was going to tell you. You ever see that YouTube video with Tim Allen about ham radio at Thanksgiving time? That came across my Facebook feed, and I was trying to figure out a way to capture it and post it on Telegram. It was pretty funny.
Can't say that I remember. I know he's a ham radio operator, and I know it's been in the show on a few occasions, but I can't honestly tell you the when or what the story was or anything.
Well, the gist of it was he's on some sort of HF rig and throws out his call sign, something zero, and nobody answers. And then he says, well, everybody that's in the basement hiding from their family this Thanksgiving, give me a shot back. And then the radio just busted open with all sorts of conversations. That was pretty good. And then he got on a rant about how controlling the FCC is about hot cam radio and how not controlling they are about all sorts of other things. It was a good little skit. It lasted about, I don't know, 45 seconds to maybe a minute. But he made a point, and I didn't quite understand it all. But I'll find it, and I'll get it on Telegram. Oh, I'm at Metropolitan Parkway and I-94, and my radio votes whichever signal's stronger takes that one. I was on the Warren repeater, and it decided to jump its butt back to the Richmond repeater. I wonder if the wind is blowing this way or something.
What do you mean your radio votes? How does your radio know?
I don't know. It kind of always goes to whichever one is stronger. Because, you know, I got the Warren, I got the Richmond, and I got the Romeo. And it always picks out whichever one's stronger. And it went back to the Richmond. I don't know why it did that.
Are you scanning?
I were, but I turned it off so it stays on Warren.
Yeah, it could just be that Richmond has a half-second longer hang time or something, so it's the last one it sees up or something. Could be any number of reasons.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's usually right, so maybe it is the hang time. I don't know, or maybe the other one I ID'd or something like that and it caught it. So I know that the setting in the radio is where it goes, and you can make it not do that, but I don't know. I've kind of gotten used to it. So, anyways, anything else going on in the exciting world of radio? I was on the other side of the state. That was kind of nice. We went and did the Enlighten tour at Meyer's Gardens, which was basically a whole bunch of lights in their little Meyer's Gardens, about a mile walk, and oohing and ahhing and all sorts of Christmas trees. So we did that, and then we went to their little Claus Market downtown. So it was kind of an adventure, and they were getting hit with snow pretty good, so we really didn't head south. We just stayed at the little Amway Hotel and for a couple days, and then turned around, went and visited my daughter at work, and turned around and came home on Sunday. And KPP will be back. Just got to take a phone call.
Good afternoon. 1300 hours. Mostly sunny. 34 degrees. Good afternoon. 1400 hours. Mostly cloudy. 34 degrees.
NHKPP.
K8, are you H mobile?
Good afternoon. 1500 hours. Mostly cloudy. 34 degrees. Good afternoon. 1600 hours. Mostly cloudy. 33 degrees.
NADBF mobile.
WATAP.
How's it going, Eric?
Hey, not much. Heading up to the station.
The station?
Yeah, your second job, Sterling Heights Police, remember?
My bad, I thought you meant you were going to the station. No, I'm off duty today. No need to worry about dispatch.
Worrying about Hondas with no plates?
No, but I'm about to cut one off.
Yeah, I'm leaving work a little early. I gotta get my car looked at. I got in a little fender bender the other day. Didn't really even bend my fender. I tore up my rim. That's a long story. But anyhow, yeah, I got to get a little estimate. Two Jeeps. Yeah, it was my daily driver. Of course, Mound had a lane closure, and I was right in some guy's dead spot in the big 18-wheeler, and he just, like, came over into my lane, and I feel this force, like, pushing me. My car's going, like, sliding sideways as he's pushing me over. And he goes, oh, and he didn't see me.
Well, I'm glad you're all right. Good thing it was a little, a little, like you said, a little fender bender versus, actual collision with a semi.
Well, we were all stopped in traffic. I had a car in front of me, car behind me, car next to me. I had nowhere to go. I did scoot up a little bit, so we didn't get the whole side of my car. I just got the back. But, no, cars cut me off all the time. But no one's hit me, and I haven't hit anybody, and no one's hit me in about 40 years. Probably about 85 is the last time I got in an accident.
a guy ran a red light and, like, hit me. Like, hit me head on. But that was in 85.
You had a decent track record. You were due. That's unfortunate. The good thing is, he's at fault. The bad thing is, you still got to pay for it and take your time to go get an estimate and then get it repaired.
Actually, his company's going to pay for everything. If I need a loaner car or anything, they're going to pay for it all. So, worked out. But, I mean, you know, mound roads, treacherous, M59. If you can drive M59 and mound for several years and not get hit, it's like, my girlfriend got rear-ended like 3 times in the last 5 years. My sister got rear-ended a couple times on I-75, so pretty lucky, I guess.
That was the last time I got a love tap. I was stopped on Hall Road before they did the lane expansion, and I was in my first Silverado, and I always have something in the receiver, either a hitch, depending on what time of year. I don't keep them in there in the winter because they rust, or I have like a D-ring in the receiver just for toe straps and stuff in the wintertime, and some younger girl not paying attention smoked me at a dead stop. I say smoke, she's probably doing like 10, 15 miles an hour, but destroyed her front fascia on her Equinox, and my truck had some white paint on the hitch, so fortunately that was the last incident I had.
I mean, there was that time in 1986, a guy from my work, I was pulling out of work, he was right behind me, and I go to pull out, and this car ran a red light, and because I have lightning fast reflexes, I stopped. Well, the guy that I work with didn't, and he hit me about 10 miles an hour, and he was a Fiero, and the whole front of his car just, like, fell off. Didn't do any damage to my Daytona, but the front of his car just tipped over and fell off. I was like, what? That was weird.
Yeah, but those Daytonas were tanks.
Yeah, his excuse was he hit his nitrous button. He panicked. When he hit the brakes, he panicked and hit his nitrous button.
You know, Fiero and nitrous don't seem like two things that go together in the same sentence.
That was the V6 Fiero. And remember the ones that had that wicked, like an air intake duct on the back of it, like going over the top of the roof? Remember that? Rarely saw those. He had that kit on there. And didn't have a turbo, but he had the nitrous on there.
No, I haven't seen one of those, but in my defense, the Fieros I see are the ones that are still on the road today. They weren't, when did I get my license? I got my license in 2009 or 10. So, I don't think Fieros were around anymore.
Yeah, those kind of went by the wayside along with the DeLoreans. Used to be quite a few of those on the road, but not anymore.
My old job when I worked at UHY, there was a guy there. He had running and driving DeLorean, I think, but he was like in the process of like fully doing a resto on it. I don't know if he ever finished it, but he said that parts were incredibly hard to find, they were expensive, and he said that they were just completely built like garbage, low quality, and like everything broke.
W88P. Yeah, they had a wimpy engine, a V6 in it that was underpowered. They're heavy cars, and they had a really weak engine in them, and they weren't that great of cars. I mean, right now they're collector's items, obviously. But you know what car that was actually a good car is AMC Eagle, the first four-wheel drive car, first SUV, is way ahead of its time. Remember those?
Shared similar characteristics to like a Taurus?
No, more like a Subaru or something. It was like, it was kind of car-ish, but it was kind of boxy, and it kind of sat up pretty high. Those were actually pretty cool. I mean, those are worth a lot of money now, too. But, yeah, traffic's terrible. I haven't been down this road in years. I haven't been down 15 mile in years.
Hey, GDF, bad time of day. I'm glad that they finally got the Van Dyke 53 situation semi-resolved. Well, it's wintertime, so that's why it's done. But I can actually get on 53 in a timely manner. Before, I was waiting for 10 minutes.
Roger. Wow, those Eagles had a 258 cubic inch straight six, and they used them in the Jeep Cherokees, like in the 80s. Jeep Cherokees, that style. They're good engines. They had all kinds of power. They had the same four-wheel drive setup. Anywho, yeah, I don't know what's going to be classic car 20 years from now. I can't imagine.
I know, right? It makes me wonder a lot. All the vehicles I've had and driven, it's like, where are they going to be worth anything in 10, 15 years? Like, what's not going to be worth anything is this F-150 Lightning I'm looking at. Although I'm trying to figure out how I can get out of the truck I got now. It's a lease. If I can get out of it, I'm going to go lease a Hummer EV if they keep dropping the price on them.
There you go. That's not going to be your trip vehicle, right? Just your daily driver or weekend driver? Or is that not going to be your long trip vehicle?
No, absolutely not. I'm doing it, I want to do it because the price is almost the same as leasing a pickup truck right now. I don't want it for any of the EV functionality other than the fact that I can charge it at my house and not pay for gas, which would be kind of cool, but I just like the Hummers. I think those EV Hummer trucks are sweet. They're big, they're heavy, which is not a great, but adaptive ride height and all that. There's just some cool stuff, cool technology that I would love to lease one for 2 years and just experience it. But yeah, I would never count on it for, you know, a road trip, reliability, not catching on fire, pretty much all those things. I hate EVs, but I love those Hummers.
KJO.
Yeah, there he is. Yeah, I'll let you go in a second there. What do you think of the Rivia? Rivia pickups are pretty cool looking. And after that, hand it over to Cujo.
Those things are sweet too, but much like every other EV I've seen, I've watched some YouTube videos on them. You can option the hell out of them, but then they're, you know, $120,000, $140,000 for what's essentially a disposable vehicle, which I guess at this point, they're all disposable. I just think the longevity is much greater on a internal combustion vehicle rather than an EV that has battery packs that cost, you know, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, and they last 5 years. Sweet trucks, but I've seen some YouTube videos where similar issues, right? Quality, engineering, there's weird quirks, like if you get the off-road option, there's a bunch of skid plates that'll just hold dirt and rocks, you don't really have any way of getting to them without taking the truck apart. Just little things like that, but they're still in their infancy, in my opinion, and there's a lot more that can be done with them, so we'll see. Not against them, but I'm definitely not for them at this point in their technology. Cujo, pick it up.
Hummer, the one that has, you said it's adaptive driving. Is that the one that does the crab crawl, too?
Yes, sir. It has adjustable ride height. It does the crab walk. It's got rear steer to an extent. Like I said, a lot of cool technology I'd like to experience, but not necessarily own, so I will happily rent one from General Motors and get them their problem back after I'm done with it. Eric, go ahead.
General crab walk. That's a funny way to put it. Yep. Well, I don't know what I'm going to do come January, February. My lease will be up, and I have a couple ideas, but I don't know. Whatever's halfway decent has got a halfway decent price. But the way things are going, Stellantis,
I don't know. They're not offering any discounts right now. So, don't know what I'm going to get next.
I own my vehicle, but of course I don't buy new anyways. They're too expensive. My kids own their trucks, and they both have F-150s, and they got them for a pretty decent price.
I've owned a couple vehicles, and all I ever did was fix them. So, whether it was a $60,000 Super Duty or a $30,000 Buick, it was constant money. Seems like when I lease them and they're brand new and I only drive them for a couple years, I don't have to worry about it.
Yep, that's the best way to do it. If there's a deal on them, though. That way, you're always driving a brand new vehicle. It's always under warranty. You never have to put brakes on it. You never have to put tires on it. I mean, owning your own vehicle is good, but, you know, it can nickel and dime you after a while. Like, I own this vehicle, and I had to put brakes and tires on it one time so far. But, yep. I mean, those sweet lease deals aren't around anymore, though.
If you know somebody at GM or Stellantis or Ford, you can get the employee, family, and friends discount or something like that. But, yeah, leases are great if you don't drive a lot of miles, but, you know, both my kids drive a lot of miles daily, so it's more beneficial. Not only that, they can outfit them the way they want, they can lift them, they can drop them. Of course, my kids aren't dumb and don't do that Carolina drop crap. Their trucks are lifted. My daughter's short.
That's my problem right now is I leased this truck when I had a company vehicle and I haven't even had it a year and I'm already over miles. So, I don't know, it is what it is. Let's put it this way. I've never kept a leased vehicle till turn-in. I always sell them beforehand. So, I don't know if it's a loophole or not, but usually walk away for a couple bucks, and then that's a wrap. Oh, man, I'm at 53 and 30-mile road, and I just saw cops racing up here, and now we're at a standstill on the highway.
Well, I do get the family, friends, and all that discount, and you get a 30,000 or 15,000 a year lease. Turn it in early or turn it in, pay a little penalty. Sometimes you're just so happy to get it back that it's in good shape, they'll eat the extra miles if you go over. But I run about 10 to 12,000. The girlfriend runs about 15,000. We usually have some miles left over. And then when we turn the vehicle in, we usually get anywhere from 2 to 5,000 in equity to use that as a down payment on the next vehicle. So it works out. So it worked out for us so far.
That's the plus side. So my daughter has been down to Tennessee. She's been up to Tennessee and up on the west side. You know, so she travels all, you know, she travels all over on a whim kind of thing. My son lives in Davison, and he works down at the bridge, or he works at Metro, he works wherever they send him. And I think he's already got 20,000 extra on his truck, and he just got early this year, I believe. Something like that. Well, I know he drives a lot. Me, I'm on my 11th service van over 25 years. This thing's only a couple months old, and I got 23,000 on it already.
Fortunately for me, my commute's not terrible. It's 29 miles each way, I think. So, doable, not with a 10,000 mile lease, I'd probably have to get 15K. But like I said, I've not had to deal with the over mileage at this point, but I'm sure it'll come sooner or later because the prices keep going up. I get GM discount, my uncle's an engineer or something there, and fortunate enough to get his discount, but I mean, the pricing is just outrageous. My 21 Silverado, and I went to a 24 Silverado after a couple trucks in between, and they went up. I think that truck, the 21 was 59,000. This truck is 67,000, and at the trim level below the truck that I had. So, riddle me that.
10 miles to work, I can go, yes, like 9.5 miles.
I didn't get any of that. I don't know if there was interference or what, but I'll let you guys continue on with that part of the conversation.
I gotta be, so I will talk to you in a bit. WAPAP.
All right, Eric, I'll catch you on the ISS.
Yeah? I think so. Okay, all right, man, we'll catch you later. WAPAP.
All that slowdown for a van that looks like they rear-ended a semi with a flatbed.
I forgot to live up there by me somewhere.
You said you're in Emmett, right?
Memphis.
Is it Memphis or Emmett that had the Biscos? That's what I heard. I just I couldn't remember which town it was in. Buddy of mine at work, he lives in Emmett, and I was just curious. I think that's just east on 69 where I'm at.
Yeah, if you're on east on 69, get off on M19, go north, and probably about a mile and a half, you'll run right into Biscos.
Yep, that's what I thought. I've been through there a few times, but none recently.
Yeah, the only time I meet my way up there is either one to look for a Christmas tree, because there's a Christmas tree farm that we go to. And two, when I got to take 69 across either Grand Rapids or Lansing, I'm helping out the west side.
That's northeast of Armada, right?
Only those few of us are still here.
I'm here on hold with Yaesu. Do you hear that lovely hold music?
Groovy. Well, at least it got there. I saw that. So, while you're waiting on hold, did you get your connectors?
I don't know if it got there. That's what I'm trying to confirm, because she said she would email me upon receipt. It was delivered last Wednesday, according to UPS. No, I did not have any connectors. I ordered some from DXD. I ordered the crimper and six connectors and 20 foot of RG8X, because it was cheaper and quicker than getting knockoff stuff from Amazon. And I gave up on the soldering ones.
So was that what was wrong?
I was shorting on both ends, so I think I just don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Yeah, it takes the right touch, you know. Too much, if you're dealing with RG8X, there's not a whole lot of, you know, forgiveness in the center conductor. You can melt it pretty quick, and especially if you're soldering, if you're not using any techniques or tricks to get that braid soldered in the holes, that's real tough. But, you know, after you've done enough of them, and I bunch them up every now and again as well, but, you know, it's not easy to get them right. I suppose if you did them all the time, you know, you might get them down to a science, but I never quite did enough of them to get it down to a science. You know, I'd have about a probably 80 to 90%, you know, good, but I saw that, you know, 10 to 20% of the time I butch one up.
Yeah, there's definitely a touch you need, so I said, you know what, I can crimp Cat 6 and RG6 coax and anything with a crimper I'm good at, so I'll figure that out. So I bought the crimpers, I got 6 DXD ends for RG8X, and then I got, like I said, some of their RG8X DXD cables. It was like $100, I'm like, whatever, I'm going to do it right, have my own custom cable. I can't run an assembled cable because I had to drill a hole through in the bottom of my floorboard. So I don't want to make that hole any bigger than it needs to be. So I have to run the cable through and then terminate it.
Well, there was a time where I would have said absolutely not the crimp connectors, but they've made these new ones so good, and the crimp connectors, you know, and the tool is so good that I no longer have that opinion. There are some, you know, like I said, for people that really have an aversion to it and don't want to have to do it, you can buy ends that unscrew. They have a piece that's barely larger than the coax that unscrew, the connector screws onto that, and then you can unscrew that. You can snake that through just about anything you can get the cable through, and then, you know, and then screw the connector back on at the other end. So it's almost like a mini UHF, you know, that they have directly on the end of the cable. So that's a way you can go to, but you did the best. I think you'll find those will work for you. Hey, Cujo, I didn't mean to leave you out. Go ahead.
I think he was at his destination. Yeah, no, the reviews were very, very good for the set I got. So I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to get the name brand instead of the Amazon ones. But I think the ones you're talking about, the FME ones, where it's like a little thread and you can thread on a 259, but it's like the same diameter as the cable.
Oh, is that the one you got?
No, I couldn't find any that I was happy with or could get in a timely manner, or they didn't cost a fortune.
Oh, okay, but you did see those. Yeah, those are, I've seen those pop up every now and again. I don't know anybody that uses those in the industry. They'll typically come with some antennas, you know, that, but particularly when we get into these multi, we have these antennas on the vehicles that have multiple things going on inside them. They've got you know, Wi-Fi and 4G and 5G and, and all sorts of stuff. There's multiple things going on inside of a radome, and, you know, there'll be multiple coaxes coming off, and you know, these companies sometimes. And I've seen some other, you know, companies sell those cables with the easy on, easy off connectors, and it's mostly people that are selling antennas. It all comes in a package, you know, makes it easy, but you pay for that. And it's not really something I've ever seen any, I don't know anybody that really stocks that set up to put those ends on. So, anywho, you'll have to let me know how it works for you when you get it, and then go from there. Hell, I could even be a convert. I'd have to take a look.
I use like a hybrid FME on the lit mount I have. I keep like stuttering. I'm listening to the freaking radio that they have as hold music on the background. On my Tama HD lit mount on my work car, that's what I used, and it was like a SO239 right angle that was for the lit mount, and then I use this on my Tacoma too, and then it had this like 213 I think it was, and then it went down to 174. And then it was an FME that you could fish through a super tight spot and then thread on your 259. So, it was pretty slick, but like a 13-foot section like that was like $60. I'm like, oh, I'm good. For another couple bucks, I'm going to have to tool more ends and make more cable because I do plan on jumping back on the air here pretty soon. Probably after the holiday, I'll be getting... Tell my mom, I'm like, I want A91. Don't want anything that's not back. Give me gift cards towards this. So, give me 1 second. I'll be right back.
PL-259 right angles.
Well, certainly better than getting a PL-259 wrong angle.
239 right angle.
They will affect your match on UHF. You got to take that into consideration. Don't think they don't affect your match.
So this crimp system you got come in Dakota, does it do just PLs? What do you, like if you want, I'm guessing that it does multiples, but what do you got to do, swap out dies or a different crimper, or how's that all work?
EXD has their, of course, their own brand, right? They've got a crimp tool, which, from my understanding, uses, those dies will fit in the PowerWorks crimper, but I didn't want to risk it and wait another week. So all it does is it crimps the collar on the braid and around the connector. So you can do end connectors and all that. So I think pretty much anything that you can put a collar around can be crimped. But yeah, the dies are interchangeable. It's about $24 a die, depending on the type of cable. And then the, it's not terrible. I mean, I think in the long run you save money because you're not constantly buying cable and you can just buy it by the foot. I'm sure you're well aware of this. So, I don't know. We'll see. But I'm looking forward to having my truck set up. It's going to be a pretty slick setup. I've got a Breedlove stick pocket mount, so the 2x4 is coming back out. And then I've got the RG8X ran in the bed, from the bed side, into the cab. So, it'll be nice and clean.
Well, cool beans. Sounds like a wiener. Have to check it out. I'm heading out to, I got to get home real quick here and then get situated, maybe change, and then I got to get out to Ann Arbor.
That's not right around the corner.
I wear all my Ohio State swag so that they got something to be angry about.
So you're wearing all your Ohio State swag?
I was kidding. No, I will not. But I joked that I will to give them a punching bag.
Yeah, that's taken pretty seriously over there.
What's happened to your signal?
New crimp tool. I am parked in my driveway with a house between me and the repeater, so I'm going to clear out. I know I sound like doo-doo. Let me get in and get settled. I'll hop on a note as soon as I get through to the guys to, as they say it, on their hold music. But I'm home for about 12 minutes, so I'll catch up in a bit at ABDS.
Well, you held it 100%, no problem. It's just all of a sudden you just got a lot of hiss in there with you. But you were holding it 100%, didn't miss a word. Just, it was a marked change from 2 seconds of the transmission earlier. All right. Let you get in there and focus on your getting your call and all that good stuff. Eric?
WADAD. Yeah, I'm over here around 15 Mile in Coolidge, by the way. So, repeater's still full quieting. I had to get off work a little early to go to a collision place over here, get another estimate. Long story. But, yeah, I've been looking for that APX 8000 to go on sale myself, but nope, no sales.
Yeah, my problem is I got so many little, you know, $100, $200 little things that I've got my eye on right now. You know, it adds up, you know. You know, sure, that radio's only, you know, 100 and change, and, you know, but then that full duplex node thing that Larry and Mike's got one, that's intriguing me, you know, and I want to buy a... I've been looking at modems for my T-Mobile home core antennas, you know, and those range from a couple $100 up to $300-$400. And it's like everything costs a few $100, right? So, and then I found this bike part that I'm running out to Ann Arbor to get tonight. There's another $200. So it's like, ay, ay, ay. So now I've tapped out. I gotta be good. So even if I found one of those for a good price, I'd have to refrain. But yeah, keep an eye. If you ever see those go south of a Hyundai, I'm probably in for one.
I agree on all the above. Yeah, but this one, the only one that I've seen, well, I haven't checked, you know what, I haven't checked eBay. But the one on Amazon is Ham Geek. That's another one of those brands that's rebrands, you know. So I didn't check on eBay. They sell one of the same radio, different brand, but yeah, I'd be in at about $89. I like it because it's got the dual display on it. That's a cool thing.
Yeah, that's about where I am on it. So, what the heck is going on here? I don't know if you know W2PUT. He's got one. And he pulled it out at one of the we were up north at a thing, you know, a business related thing. He works for the company that it emulates, and he kind of laughed and he says, "Hey, check." He goes, "Check this out." And he pulls it out of his pocket, and I swear I was duped until I got it in my hand, and it really. I thought that's pretty cool, you know, just for horsing around.
Yeah, and then I have an actual Motorola label. It was weird. I bought something on eBay, and they didn't have it wasn't in a box, or no, it wasn't a box. It was in a box, but it was inside of a real Motorola walkie-talkie shell. And I'm like, well, this is great. I'm going to steal that label right off. I still have it. So, yeah, that would even be perfect if I put an actual real label on it, not the homemade one.
And the industry, they call that an escutcheon. So, yeah, if you had an escutcheon, that would go right in that window, that spot where it goes. That would be cool. But, anywho, yeah, I was, I liked it enough to, pique my interest, but I'm like you, I want to be under a Hyundai, you know, yeah, 89, that's a magic number. I think they're running, the ones I saw, like you said, the Ham Geek ones are, like 139, I think. And then I've seen some, like, at 99, but they're slow boat from China, you know, from, not Banggood, but whatever, what's that other one that everybody goes to?
That would be probably AliExpress. I don't have an account for them. But, Yeah, Captain Don, he went for that one radio. Like, the only radio I've ever, the only HT I've ever seen that has a keyboard that doesn't have a DTMF generator in it. But, or if it does, it's not activated. That was funny. But who, you know, in his defense, who would have thunk? Got a keyboard on it, it's got DTMF. Nope.
Are you talking about the radio we're talking about? That APX lookalike? That doesn't have a live keyboard?
No, negative. Captain Don found one that kind of looked a little bit like it, but the cool thing is it had a vibrate mode where someone contacted you, it would vibrate, and it had a digital voice recorder built in. I think a GPS, too, so it was kind of weird. It was like $69, and it was green, so, you know. That's Captain Don's thing. He'll buy any radio if it's green.
There you go. Give me a minute. I'm at the ATM. I gotta do some fitness. I'll be right back.
Roger. And I haven't been down 15 mile in rush hour traffic in probably 10 years. Making my way back to DeQuinder. WADAP. Is the Cuginio, the Cujo, still out there?
Okay, I'm back. Now I just gotta get home, get changed, and I gotta figure out how long it's gonna take me to get the M14 and US-23 from my house. Shouldn't be too bad.
Good afternoon. 1700.
30 to 35, 40 minutes, depending on the traffic.
32 degrees.
I'm thinking pretty much going to be 45 minutes. So, I don't know. We'll see. You know, and then the thing you can never really, you know, anticipate is just how much crap you're going to get at the mixing bowl. If I go that route, I may or may not. I may opt to go Davison, rip Davison right to 96. That saves a lot of time. Although you got to go through an interesting part of town.
I think I used to take that route when I went to Milan Dragway. Somehow I think I took something to 14 and 14 to 23, 23 to the Plank Road exit. I can't believe I remember that. I haven't been that drag strip in like 5 years, 6 years.
You know, I'm honestly not sure if I've ever been to Milan. I know I've been by it, but I don't know that I've ever been down there for anything in particular. Racing has never been an interest of mine at all. I work the Grand Prix pits, doing the radio communications. Back when the guy that owns Frank's Nursery ran it all back in the 80s, I did that for a couple of years. I was there for business only. It was interesting at most. And then I've been to some boat races only because I wanted to go out on the boat in the water, Columbiaville, and then the hydroplane races once or twice out on the lake. But that's about it. I mean, that's about the only racing I've ever went to or seen. I saw some down in Wauseon, Ohio. Every year they have an antique motorcycle show, and they got these old dirt flat trackers on these old dirt, you know, on these old Harleys and Indians, you know. And they blast around the track, you know, but they're sideways almost the whole time. We watch that just for a place to go sit and drink beer and laugh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for that type of racing, the Harley twins are like the best engine. You know, you don't need a lot of high RPM or high horsepower, you just need all that torque. But yeah, if you really want to be impressed, look at the old bike races they did on wooden tracks, motorcycles with like bicycle tires on them and how fast they went. It was like $100, $120 around these wooden tracks, like actual like wooden planks. I don't know, it was crazy. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of those. Those are usually the Harleys with the, you see guys with like the drop handlebars, you know, they drop down, they'd be wearing them leather skull caps. I've seen old, you know, pictures, you know, art drawings of that kind of stuff, but no, I never actually saw one or participated in one, that's for sure. But, I saw a little demolition derby. One of my biker buddies back in the day was always entering in demos. They used to do that at up there where Gibraltar Trade Center is, right up there somewhere, Mount Clemens Racetrack. And a couple of them used to like to take cars over there and demo them. Been to a few of those. But again, that was just a reason to get together with everybody and ride somewhere and drink beer.
Another thing that they don't have around here anymore is the monster trucks. We used to have it at Pontiac Silverdome. I don't know if they still have those. Definitely not there. But I remember they used to do the tractor pulls at Pontiac Stadium. My dad was on a team. He actually designed... Oh, I got an accident up here. Anyhow, my dad designed something on one of those truck pulling vehicles. Tractor pull wasn't a tractor, it was actually a van. But anywho, those were fun.
Yeah, I have no interest in the monster truck stuff at all, but the tractor pull stuff, if it's not, you know, they get to a point where it's so crazy that those aren't tractors anymore. They're useless as tractors. If they're actually tractors, even if they're highly modified, but at least they're still a tractor, then, you know, then I'm in. I like that, you know. I kind of like racing. It's, like, purposeful, and it's probably when I was a kid. We had a lot of tech center engineers, as you well know, your father being one of them, but we had a lot of tech center engineers down here, especially in the racing scene, and they used to take us to Livonia when 96 first opened up. And they'd close it down, and we'd sit on the side of the, on the grass on the side, and just watch the races. I don't know if you know the name Simonson, with respect to the, Mopar and the Hemi and everything. Look him up. He was my neighbor, and used to him and his boys. His son was my best friend, and him and Jim Grandy was also involved in like the design of those things. He was two doors down, but yeah, look up Simonson sometime. And most Mopar history, I was dragging along with him and his boys as they were street racing.
Roger. Yeah, I'm sure my dad knew him. My dad did a lot of work in the dyno rooms, you know, in Detroit and in Syracuse. But yeah, I get it about the tractor pulls. Like, they have a good one at the Armada County Fair. They're just like big, beefy farm tractors. But they do have that unlimited class, which is ridiculous. So like, two jet engines, two Allison V12, P51 engines, four drag, five, six dragster engines. That's just stupid. I agree. That's just ridiculous.
You know, and I guess that's good to have a class like that so that the guys that, you know, just always push it beyond the envelope, you know, have some place to go. Okay, fine. You guys just want to do whatever, go there and do it, you know, and then keep a class that's, you know, more, you know, actual, you know, at least have somewhat, you know, attractive utility. But yeah, those races, those guys that were racing back in the 60s and in the late 60s, early 70s, down there, you know, all the engineers and stuff, they were testing their wares, man. They were out there. That was real deal, man. They were, you know, that wasn't just for fun. I mean, it was for fun, obviously, and bragging rights and all that stuff. But they were testing their goods. And that stuff actually, in some cases, made it to market, you know. So that was good racing, man. That was when racing was trying to accomplish something that would you know, not in its entirety, but, you know, somewhat, you know, it would make it into the automotive, you know, so the consumer could get some benefit from it, I guess is what I'm saying.
In the late 60s, when he lived in New York, my dad used to bring home heavy vehicles literally every night, Superbirds, Daytona Chargers, Coronets, Super Bees, just every muscle car you can think of, and into the early 70s when we lived here. So, yeah, it was always a treat when my dad would call, oh, what's he going to bring home this? What's he going to bring home tonight? And, of course, we'd take the obligatory drive after dinner. We'd go up and get ice cream, and there's a little stretch of highway between our neighborhood and the main North Syracuse, and, of course, we'd rip through the gears in that one little 1 or 2 mile stretch. That was fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's the good stuff, man. Man, oh, man, come on. Let me turn onto my street out here on... I'm hanging out here on the main road. I can't get on my street. Oh, here we go. Here's my brake. Nope. Oh, you dog. Let's see. Ah, there we go. Anywho, just turned onto my street. I'm going to get in the driveway here, get inside, because I got to get some things squared away so I can... be on my way out to Ann Arbor in a bit. Catch you later. After yours, W8FU.
Well, I'll tell you, Ann Arbor's a long way to go to get one of those P-Ring bicycle, little bicycle bells. I know that's what you're getting. All right, catch you later. I'm sitting over here at the drive-thru at CVS, and there's like 5 cars ahead of me. This is weird. I've never seen a line like this at CVS. Huh. W-8-E-A-B.
That's Walgreens here. We had CVS and Rite Aid here shut down. Everybody got transferred to Walgreens. Walgreens is just a zoo every time you go there. All right. I'm going to drive later. W-8-F-U.
I'm getting a Butterburger.
Oh, yeah, you enjoy that butt burger there, Greg.
Yeah, it's what the wife wanted. I'm like, all right, I'm in. So I rolled right up to the window, or the menu board, got my order in and paid. Now I'm pulled ahead and waiting.
Yeah, I'm not sure what we're getting for dinner tonight. We haven't had Culver's in a while, so that might be on the menu. I don't know. We'll see what the boss says when I get home. Like I said, I got out of work about an hour and a half early today to run some errands. So, good deal. Don't forget the ice cream. Get an ice cream to go while you're there.
Yeah, I always forget that. I usually have ice cream at home, but I don't right now. I want to get one of them salted caramel frosties they're advertising. Maybe I'll run out tomorrow and get that. You mentioned you were 5 deep at the CVS. Mine is usually 1 to 3 deep. 5's a lot. I would actually go back later or go in the store. But, yeah, that's frustrating sometimes. 88, CSI.
Well, I'm sure it's the time. Usually when I stop in here, it's either on Saturday or else after 7 o'clock, so... I'll blame it on just the time that I'm up here. I've never been through this at 5 o'clock, so 7 o'clock is probably no line. So I'll blame it on the time.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, you're right on. Hey, bud, stop and pick this up on the way home at night.
I'm surprised Dave isn't out there lurking. Throwing in his 2 cents worth in.
Yeah, it depends what kind of stuff he's got going on around the house or with work meetings and whatnot. And if he's standing, I don't know. Usually though, kind of is.
I tell you, went to work, walked into a you-know-what show and thinking, man, I should have stayed up north. Yeah, I think I got a handle on it now. So I come in and there's like eight of these not gigantic, but pretty big drive units, and they're all taken apart. Every one of them was taken apart with parts everywhere, parts missing. It wasn't like another department had went through already. I'm like, oh man, I like my whole area is just piled with these things. I'm like, oh no.
Wow, that's no fun coming back like that and have a big pile up, but well, at least it sounds like you dug your way out of it.
Well, I got three of them fixed and put back together, so now I still got, that took a little bit of the clutter out of my area, but there's still at least five or six more that I got to go through and put back together, and some of them had the stupidest problems. Like, someone put them together and forgot to put the insulators underneath the transistors. So, like, the transistor was shorted right to ground. Keeps blowing fuses.
Oopsie. Wow, at least you found that. Hey, this is Jeff, but you're busy. And, you can only do what you can do. They can pile up as much as they want. You know, do what you can do.
Yeah, since I've been working on these things, all my robotics, my normal repairs have been piling up, and they're kind of training this new guy. I mean, he's an experienced electronics technician. He just hasn't worked on that particular line. So I'm kind of training him, and then they're talking about putting me on a service call tomorrow. It's like, okay, whatever. It actually helps the day go. I mean, I'd rather have more work than normal than less, because then the day goes by, like, really quick. When you're busy, the day just rips by.
Oh, yeah, I hear that for sure. So a service call, you get out in the field. That's what I've always done. That was my... I was just different, but hated being in the office. And I heard Sean's going to Ann Arbor. I was just cutting the tail out of that. What's he doing that for?
Yeah, he went down to low power. I heard he's getting a vintage Pee Wee Herman bicycle bell. A little safety bell for his bicycle. I could be wrong, but no, he's going to get some kind of bicycle part. Am I still making it in fine on low power underneath this drive-through?
Yes, I was backing up and negotiating the tires around me, right before that. Of course, I was receiving my food, so I had a little pause there. You're coming in good. I'm at high power, but I got my antennas currently folded. I didn't bother unfolding it for this short trip.
Got my stuff and I'm on my way.
All right, very good. I'm about an eighth mile from my sub, almost home. So I'm going to run in and eat my dinner.
Yeah, I got to check this satellite pass. Maybe I'm missing it. All right, I'll catch you later after you eat and after your call of duty. WEAP.
Yeah, I haven't checked past times. I'll check after I eat, and maybe I'll catch one, but like right now I won't be able to. And then, likely will be Call of Duty tonight, so. All right, talk to you later, K-E-A-B-S-I.
If you're out there listening, Greg is a good one, right at 6 o'clock on the nose, 81 degrees. Catch you there, W-8-E-A-B.
KACFM.
KACAKJO.
Good evening, AT. 100 hours. Mostly clear. 32 degrees. Good evening, 1900 hours. Clear. 30 degrees. Good evening, 2000 hours. Clear. 29 degrees. Good evening, 21 hours. Clear. 29 degrees.
N1 KRD mobile.
Good evening, 22 hours. Clear. 27 degrees. Good evening, 23 hours. Mostly clear. 27 degrees.